Hello and welcome to More Than Thumbs. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Grayson.
And I'd like to begin with a brief acknowledgement of some news that by the time you're listening to this might be very old news, but for us is more recent. That is the passing of John Lewis and Michael Brooks. John Lewis, of course, was a congressman from Georgia for over 30 years. He was the last of the Big Six civil rights leaders who put their lives on the line to end racial segregation in the South in the United States of America. Lewis fought for something that is truly, truly remarkable. And I think that any activist in America would be lucky to have the kind of impact he had in people's lives, the kind of positive impact he had on people's lives in their own work and their own advocacy. It's something that I aspire to. I think America is a worse place for not having him.
And to talk briefly about the passing of Michael Brooks, he was a very young Democratic socialist political commentator who was attached to just about any show that preached a similar ideology. The David Pakman Show, Secular Talk, Young Turks. But he was most notably connected to the Majority Report with Sam Cedar. Just a brilliantly funny guy and radicalized me into thinking more about the way that foreign policy, specifically American foreign policy, is the thing that should be most prominently talked about and discussed thing in political discourse. It's the way that we actually communicate with each other as a species around the world. And his policies really reflected a compassion and care. And that really just goes beyond just a flowery rhetoric. Even though his politics were really detail-oriented, they were always interested in making sure that as many people as possible could live with economic self-respect without the danger of being at risk of violence all the time. And he will be very, very deeply missed.
Absolutely. Two very big losses. So, moving forward, what we want to do today, we're going to have a bit of a different episode. Every episode we've had so far has been an actual movie review. We began with the VHS series, and by the time you're listening to this, hopefully we'll have the first episode of a new series on the film Dinesh D'Souza out, leading up to his newest film, The Movie Event of the Summer, which is Trump Card. But before we do that, we wanted to take a little bit of time to talk about some questions we frequently get from our friends. And we want to answer to that both for them listening to this, and thank you all for doing so, we very much appreciate it, but also for any new viewers coming in who don't know me, who don't know Grayson, who couldn't as easily get this information just offhand by asking us. Which brings us, of course, to our first frequently asked question, and it is certainly the most frequently asked question. Why are the episodes so long? Why can't you cut them down? Why is every episode longer than the length of the movie you're talking about?
The first thing is, I think that it's important for us to be able to get our own voice out there. I know that especially early on in podcasts, we're still finding, you know, exactly how it is that we want to deliver all of it. But I don't think that we really ever have much of a plan to change how long it is that we want the episodes to be, in part because as we, you know, refine and make our deliveries a little more succinct and clear, removing ums and likes from the way that we talk and so forth, I think that it's important to us to be able to show off that we have a type of voice of our own. And our voice is one that we really feel comfortable letting it breathe and express itself to the point where really just about everything that we have to say about the film that we're discussing has been said. You know, there are a lot of podcasts that I really appreciate. Important Cinema Club, one that's enjoyable. Now Playing Podcast.
Now Playing Podcast is great.
Very excellent. And even Now Playing Podcast, one that has episodes that are a fair bit longer. But there are a lot of times when I listen to a Now Playing Podcast episode and I'll say, huh, they didn't really talk about X, Y, or Z. And it is a little odd that they didn't really, like, that they spent so much time on this minor point and then they kind of skip over larger sections of the film. This doesn't happen super often, and this isn't to criticize them in particular.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that it's important for me, and a lot of this is frankly being enabled by Jesse, though also I enable him, to kind of just talk at length about what it is that we feel about a movie and how it's not always just about a discussion of a movie in and of itself. It's about talking about the trends that maybe can come up because of it, pointing out a particular trait in a movie. Like, for example, if I was to talk about some kind of formal technique that I didn't like in a movie, like Midsommar, for example, level, I think we could have a larger conversation about the state of horror filmmaking, the kind of fan base that has kind of sprouted up around A24, which is more of a distribution company and not as much of a production company, and how goalpost shifts around topics and fan bases and the commodification of hipsterdom in general. I mean, these are things that are actually interesting, but, you know, maybe it's important for them to appear in episodes where they actually are especially relevant and not just sideline them to being completely separate podcasts on their own. And I think that it's important to be able to have a discussion, at least for me and for, I think, so for Jesse as well. I think it's important to have a discussion where by the end of your time talking about a particular film or a topic, you've really said just about everything it is that you have to say. You're not leaving anything out. Just as a personal thought on it, I feel as if, in a way, I've almost been cheated in a way if it was anything else.
I think that the answer to the question, why are they so long? Why are the episodes so long? I mean, my guess is, to an extent, they might get a bit shorter as we get better at editing, as we get, yeah, as you said, as we're more concise, and we eliminate those ums and likes. And my favorite is, I always say, you guys, or it's like this, or, you know, things that, like, you sort of say over and over again. But what really pads out the length is that we talk about everything to its fullest extent. And it's in the name, you know, it's called More Than Thumbs for a reason. The reason is that's a response to the kind of thumbs up, thumbs down stuff. And I don't want to spend 30 minutes criticizing Siskel and Ebert. I, you know, say what you will, maybe that the impact of the thumbs up, thumbs down is bad, but I would say that they are better in the 5-minute time of discussing movies, at getting important and worthwhile information out, and getting worthwhile discussion out of it than some critics are nowadays in 30-minute reviews. But I think it's a response against that kind of idea that you're supposed to limit it so that it's in a reasonable time frame. And that's why it's good that it's a podcast rather than another form of media, because the good thing about a podcast is you can listen to it whenever. You can listen to it in certain segments. You listen to it in little bits over the course of the day. What I like about More Than Thumbs is people sometimes ask me, well, is it review? Is it criticism? My view is it's criticism and discussion. It's about not everything we say over the course of the podcast we're nearly tailing to this is about our rating and what's our rating. It's about discussing the broader implications of a work that exists. And it's not just about me feeling good. I want to make clear, it's not just about me and Grayson showing off how super special and wonderful and quirky and hipsterish we are.
I'm not a hipster, by the way. I reject that.
I reject that too, though. My girlfriend calls me a hipster. I'm not a hipster. I'm going to put that forward. But, you know, it's not about how cool and quirky we are. It's also,
I am looking at a fedora in your room. I just want to say I appreciate
that's actually a lie, because you're looking at multiple fedoras. There's a fedora there. There's multiple fedoras in my room. That's true. I also am known to play acoustic guitar at parties.
Oh, are you serious? That's really bad.
Yeah, you know, it's not about showing off just how quirky and fun I am. You know, it's not like doing a 4-hour podcast, which we actually recently did, which...
Yeah, it's not an exaggeration. The unedited form of the Obama's America podcast was 4 hours long.
Yeah, I haven't finished editing that yet. My guess is it's going to be like 3:30, maybe. Maybe, yeah, we'll maybe less. I don't know how much of that footage needs to be taken out, but like it's going to be a long, long episode. At the least, it could be 2 hours longer than the actual movie is. But I think it's not just about being fair to us. It's about, when you really think about it, they didn't take 90 minutes to make these movies.
Mm-hmm.
No filmmaker is owed your time, your attention, your money, or any other resource you have just because they've put hard work into it. But every filmmaker deserves a fair evaluation. Every filmmaker, they've put time, they've put resources, they've dedicated their life to it. Even something... Spoiler alert, Obama's America is shit, and no one on that podcast episode liked that movie. Dinesh D'Souza put time and effort into that movie. So he did. He went around the world, talked to people, interviewed people in Obama's life, got fairly impressive gets in terms of the interviews. Now, whether he did...
Now, whether the interviews were good or not is very...
That's a different question, and the answer is no. But... He did. He did that. And he doesn't deserve my time or my attention or my money. He is owed a fair valuation of his work. And I don't think there's a fair way to do that where after half an hour we're saying, but really this is too much time. I think we're not. I think not. And the reason I don't think they'll ever do something like abbreviated versions is because, I don't know, if you don't like it, skip around or something. Or if you want abbreviated versions, those exist a dime a dozen of places in the world that do this. But this is what we have an interest in doing. This is what I want to do. This is the kind of podcast I want to run. And I think that that's fairest to the filmmakers who, you know, in every film, there's at least one human being on it who made at least some kind of effort into it, and they deserve that time. They deserve that effort. They deserve someone recognizing that they did something that should be talked about.
Mm-hmm. And I also want to just comment on something that you just said. I, as a side note, would not be as diplomatic when talking about the impact of the kind of Siskel Ebert structure of a review. I think that when you have a review like that, and I'm not just picking on them, I'm more talking about their legacy.
Yeah.
But the implication of what you just said is not just that we're going into more detail than everybody else and that makes us different. It's that other people have failed to go into the appropriate amount of detail. I think Jesse is, even though everything he said is completely correct in all regards, and really the only thing that I could imagine somebody would say as a response is, well, it's just a bit long for me, and well, that's subjective, and I totally respect that. But I think what I want to try to say is that this podcast, as far as I'm concerned, should be the starting of a shift of the Overton window of how it is that film criticism is conducted. When you have something like, say, Siskel and Ebert, who by the time that their plot summary is done in many of their reviews, really only have 2 minutes to discuss the film, a totally inappropriate amount of time to discuss a movie like, I mean, really just any movie. It needs to be understood that it's not just them, it's even people that offer 10 minutes of time. You're not going to be able to talk about the main things that everybody wants to talk about in a film, like, oh, how did the movie look, or how did it make me feel, or how did I want it to feel, or something like that. Maybe we'll talk about those things. Maybe we'll even respond to why it is that some of those things should or shouldn't be things that you think about as much, but we're also going to have more. We think that film criticism, and this is definitely going to be an episode that we talk about at some point, film criticism is not something where there's a set number of things that you must address in your review. There's a set number of things that have to be talked about in a certain amount of detail, and then everything else is superfluous. There is a lot more detail and consideration to certain elements of enormous amount of movies that we've seen and talked about with each other that people just don't really discuss, and I think that that's inappropriate. I think that we have an interest in trying to do what we can to make it more of a general discussion where more things get discussed.
The thing we want to take a moment and look at is any movie. There is, mm-hmm. One of my philosophies of this is, I do not believe that any movie can't be a good episode, and I do not believe that any movie there's just actually nothing to say. Sometimes, you know, we struggle more to, you know, I'm sure we both have that experience, we watch a movie, we kind of struggle to really come up with that much to say, but that doesn't mean there's nothing. Certainly, 2 minutes is not, and I don't want to just pick on Siskel and Ebert, because critics who I have a lot of respect for and like, and admire in my own way, but, you know, 2 minutes, or even, like, when you find 5-minute videos, 10-minute videos, sometimes even 40-minute to an hour videos aren't enough to really talk about movies like A Clockwork Orange, like Ed Wood, Barry Lyndon, like Solaris, like the
Or even movies that we have even more muted reactions to. Like, I just recently watched a movie that I didn't really enjoy very much, the American President. You know, I mean, your reaction there was like, oh, you disagree with me.
And
that's fine. And we can have a conversation about that. But that's not really something that I would imagine we would be able to get all of our points out about all the things in the movie that we feel about in an hour. No. And I don't even really feel like by 2 hours, once we've stated all the things that we feel about the movie, the approaches and perspectives that we have about all the things that we feel about the movie, we've even really started to get into the idea of maybe not convincing the other person, but trying to get them to understand our perspective in a more nuanced way. Yeah. You know, this stuff, you know, there are people that can state their opinion, and there's a talent for that. I think that it's even more difficult to hold a discussion where all of, the, or not all, I mean, we don't have the hubris to think that we're going to discuss every single conceivable element all the time, but I mean, where we're discussing more elements than people usually do, hopefully, but actually being able to have a roundtable discussion about all those elements and maybe having interesting conversations on things that maybe you haven't even thought of in the first place.
Well, maybe we had, one of us hadn't, bringing up something. We've opened with some with VHS, which is a
bad series.
It's a bad, it's more than just being a bad series, though. It's like stupid and nothing. They're now making a new one, maybe theoretically, but no one's really thought about it. Hell, really, since VHS 2. But I think there's something that needs to be said about that. 5 minutes is not enough time to talk about VHS. Especially VHS because it is a just an anthology film, but like it's not about enough time to talk about any of the segments.
Mm-hmm.
In 5 minutes, so think about like the wraparound segment from the first VHS movie. In 5 minutes, could you imagine addressing tone, how it looks visually, the performances, its misogyny, the broader implications of its misogyny.
How it fits structurally within the rest of the piece.
Exactly. I think that those are things that you need to distinguish. I'm not under the impression that we are God's gift to film criticism or this is the greatest show in the history of shows, but it is needed. If in a few years, if in 20 years, we're looking back at this podcast and saying, wow, this really is not as good as the kind of thing that came after it, fine by me. I'm happy with that, but I want more shows like it. The big reason, and this is my big answer to why are they so long, it's because I am interested in doing a podcast that I would want to listen to.
Yeah.
This is what I want. I want more of this kind of thing. It's the reason I like Malplaying. And I don't even think they go into enough detail sometimes. This is what I want to hear. My belief in all art is you don't worry. You need to, the first thing to think about is this something that I would like? And I think that's a good transition to another frequently asked question I get. It's why do we care? Why does this even matter that we're doing a show about film criticism? And a lot is encompassed in that. Whenever we hear someone who's like, well, why can't you just agree to disagree, or it doesn't even matter, why are you getting so angry about film, why are you getting so passionate about film? There's a simple answer, which is, maybe in the grandest scheme of things, it doesn't matter. But I think that film criticism matters because art matters. Film criticism matters because film matters. It matters because you can't say a great painting or a great TV show or a movie or anything that's important and that means something and then say the discussion of it doesn't. And when I look at film as a medium, and really a lot of art, when I look to theater, when I look to literature, but for me, the two great loves artistically for me are cinema and theater. I look at, you know, it's something Roger Ebert called a machine-generating empathy. It has a tremendous power to change people's minds, to shape how they view the world, to make people question their own beliefs, to make people believe things that are truly good and powerful and progressive, or to guide people towards things that are truly ugly and regressive. And likewise, they are also a mirror of what society is like, of our values. It gives us a sense of how we actually are and what we value and what can be popular. It's really worth thinking about, in my view. Not just because I personally find it interesting, but because I think that gives a lot of insight. Because I think film is powerful. That means it can be wielded in ways that are good and are bad. That are beneficial and dangerous. And does that mean it's the single most important thing to ever exist in the world? Sure, okay, maybe it's not. But it needs to be taken seriously.
Film, in particular, is one of the more accessible forms of art that we have out right now. And I think that encouraging a discourse around film in general is a nice entry point and a gateway into having not just a more interesting and insightful discussion of art in general, but it kind of helps you flex your muscles to really think about however many other issues going on in the world. Having a robust and involved conversation about film and taking it as seriously as you would something like politics helps you think of a variety of things as having an intricacy. I just think that it's film criticism is something that encourages not just debate and discussion, but it encourages people to develop a need for nuance. I don't know if this podcast is going to do that for a bunch of other people. If it does, that's really wonderful.
film criticism can be a vehicle to discussing other issues going on. The whole idea of doing D'Souza and doing a series on D'Souza's films comes from, I think, in part, a desire to talk about, you know, it's a way to facilitate a conversation about the broader politics in a time where, at least since 9/11, politics feels very personal. It's a vehicle to have those conversations. It's a means to do so in a way that feels more safe, that feels easier to process. If you can work these things out through the things that you watch, you can work these things out there in the world. When I look at Lindsay Ellis and how she evaluates, you know, not all of her videos are about, like, very, very difficult themes and art, but sometimes it is. You look at a video she did also recently on music during the Bush years, which isn't film criticism, it's more media analysis, but when she talks about media as it relates to war, as it relates to political trauma, I watch that and I feel more equipped as a viewer to consider these things out there when I just sort of encounter them. It's a tool when you watch something like all the scenes in VHS where someone is, like, being filmed without their consent, and then talking about that and actually having a conversation. We can talk about, like, the sort of tropes. I think it makes it easier to talk about sexism in our life, in a broader sense. When you watch films with certain kinds of tropes about women, again and again they repeat, it creates a kind of normalizing effect. Like, oh, this is kind of acceptable. And it both reflects an idea that certain behavior is acceptable. So VHS movies, you have a lot of movies where women are being filmed without their consent. It's easy to watch a lot of these films and then be influenced by a culture that it isn't creating, but that it's a part of, saying this is kind of acceptable. And then reacting very differently when you see it in real life. When you challenge these ideas in the art you watch, it makes it easier to challenge them in real life. It gives you a chance to think about these things in a way where it's not profoundly personal. In your life, shouldn't be the time when someone comes to you and says, this horrible, horrible thing has happened to me. Whether it's that, whether it's death in the family, whether, you know, these are the ways that we prepare people for things. This is the way that I think a lot of people relate to the world, the life around them, things that happen in their life. Maybe not consciously. Maybe, you know, there aren't too many people, unless your name is Jesse Horowitz, you're not thinking, well, this event in my life really reminds me of a scene in VHS.
And I just want to say that I don't agree. I agree with the sentiment. I don't know if it is actually how it is that we should ultimately be relating to film. But again, that's part of the importance of having a discussion of the length that a lot of these episodes are going to end up being, as opposed to something like a video essay where one of us can very carefully construct the rationale behind why it is that we would feel like what Jesse just said is the moral way of experiencing trauma and getting prepared to it through film. We can just have a free-form discussion. And maybe there's a value to having no idea what it is the other person's going to say. Yeah. Maybe there isn't. But it's a different way of experiencing a topic as opposed to what someone like Lindsay Ellis does, which, and it's not saying anything bad about what Lindsay Ellis does. I think she's great.
The reason that I'm doing this, not like a video essay, like why are we doing a podcast, not like...
Well, first of all, we're not good editors.
You've probably been able to tell from the episode. We're not very good editors. I'm not a good editor.
Yeah, wait till you see me.
I really hope that someone is listening to this like 5 years ahead and they're like, oh, no, I think they're pretty good editors.
That's not going to happen. Don't even entertain the idea that that's going to happen, because that's going to make us and our listeners feel bad.
Oh. I think one of the values about doing this in a way that's unscripted is I think there's a freedom to say something that is off the cuff. You're bouncing ideas off someone, and also to say something profoundly, profoundly stupid. I'm a big believer as when you are doing things in the public eye and you're talking about these things, you need to not be afraid to say something that you're going to regret saying the minute you stop saying it. Because it happens. And listen, I could say, you know, there are going to be times in this podcast where I'm going to say something I really regret and you're going to say something I really regret. The attitude might be to cut it out of the episode and editing, or what I want the attitude to be is to say, okay, let's evaluate why that was stupid. And I don't think what that is necessarily not a backwards ass, I apologize for an advanced thing. I like that. I think this is an environment where I can say something that really means something, and it means that I can say something that's stupid and it's going to be challenged, and that I might be saying at the end of it, you know, yeah, I'm wrong.
It's an actual forum. Yeah. I think that is, in general, that is the summation of what it is that we're trying to accomplish here.
So next question that I get a lot is, what kind of movies do we review? This was a much bigger thing in the age of Channel Awesome. I haven't noticed it as much, but there's this thing of, like, every critic having to have their niche. That was very big on Channel Awesome, because there was, like, a 5-year period, partly because YouTube was not very kind to film critics who used any clip from any movie. So people went offline, they went to, like, Channel Awesome, and because of the structure of the site, everyone had to have their niche. You couldn't just be a film critic. You just couldn't be, like, a guy who talks about movies. You had to have, like, your niche. That was a big thing for a while. The Nostalgia Critic, obviously, he had only sort of older movies from his childhood, 80s, 90s films.
Brad Jones would review C-grade shot-on-video movies that would end up on video shelves in the 90s. Spoonie would review mid-tier to low-tier fantasy films from the 80s and 90s.
Filmbrain would review kind of mediocre 4 out of 10 mid-2000s movies.
Phalus would do 3 out of 10 horror films from the 2000s and late 90s.
Nostalgia Chick did what Nostalgia Critic did, but goals, I guess.
She has evolved, and she's great. That's Lindsay Ellis' assignment.
Blockbuster Buster would do, like, big blockbustery movies, all sort of bad. And even you have people outside of that. Like, YMS, for a long time, he kind of just does bad movies. He's an angry critic, is what I'd call it. Mr. Plinkett is an example of an angry critic. And if you want to talk about people like Siskel and Ebert, people who I like, who I don't like their legacies, that's a conversation for another time, but Mr. Plinkett's on the top of that list. And it makes me very sad to say that, because I do really like the Mr. Plinkett reviews. I like the media a lot. So the one thing we've been asked a lot is, so what kind of movies do we do? The big similarity between the movies that we've done so far, which were all the VHS franchise and the series of films, you know, that's the other series. The big commonality is that they've been bad. I think there's been one movie that has gotten from either of us a passing rating. That's VHS 2. I gave it a 6. You gave it a 5, Grayson. What I will say is the answer to the question, what kind of movies do we do, is about everything.
It's whatever it is that interests us, and I think that for a while, the impression that I've gotten from the conversations that we've had when it comes to planning, that sometimes it may be theme-based. I know that at times we've had discussions about maybe doing something from a particular Oscar year, looking at a particular category, and maybe saying, oh, we'll look at the performances of the supporting actors from 1995 and really comparing each of them. Maybe we rank them, and part of that would have to do with how they actually function within their own film, whether they deserve to even be nominated in the first place.
Whether they are actually a supporting actor.
Who should have been nominated instead, something along those lines. We could also do something like a retrospective of a series.
Like VHS.
Like VHS. We could do a director retrospective series, a writer retrospective series, a look back on certain years where we have a top 10, a bottom 5. There's no real structure right now that we have to what it is that we're going to be doing. But yeah, something that is really important to make clear is that we're not going to be exclusively doing bad movies, and we're not going to exclusively be doing horror movies. So around the time that we finished up the VHS series, Jesse and I were talking about what series we wanted to do next. And it was important to Jesse, and I definitely see in retrospect that he was right about this. It was important to him that we do something that not only wasn't in the horror genre, but it was important to him to also do something that was good. But, I mean, that didn't exactly last.
I can assure our audience that the next thing we do will be a series that a human being would conceivably enjoy spending their time on.
So, for example, and this is not what we're going to do next, or maybe it is, I don't even know. Yeah, I'm just throwing this out there. I mean, I mentioned The American President earlier. If we were to do something like an Aaron Sorkin retrospective, there would definitely be some that I would not like, and I'm sure that there would be some that I would like, and I'm sure that it would be the exact same thing for you.
Yeah.
Which, as a side note, depending on how it is that the entire show ends up going, we will probably end up starting to consider doing shows. West Wing for you, Avatar for me.
We also had an idea a little while ago. This got scrapped because of COVID, of an idea of doing some theater as well. Because we live in New York, and I can get access pretty easily to, like, off-Broadway shows for, like, $5. So one idea I had for a little while that we were considering was, oh, we could see, like, a bunch of, like, $5 shows, so off-Broadway, and that we could do, like, a bunch of different stuff that give us an opportunity. The only thing I, like, actually couldn't really see myself doing is, like, a review of porn, basically.
Well, I think that we're probably going to want to do an episode on different branches of film theory that we find particularly interesting, which, as a side note, that is another thing that we should probably mention, topics that we'll find interesting. And I think that when we inevitably get to affect theory, we'll have to talk about porn, and even though we won't specifically review porn films, it will be important to bring up porn in the realm of affect theory. But I think that a video discussing affect theory, I think that that would be an interesting example of us bridging a gap between, oh, maybe we're kind of looking at theory that's actually written and not just something that strictly film. And that also gives us the opportunity to maybe discuss particular trends in film criticism. I know that's something that you have a particular, investment in doing. So I guess the point of what we're trying to say here is that, well, as of right now, whatever.
Again, my philosophy is anything could be a good episode. If an episode isn't good, it's not on the film. It means that me and Glazen didn't do it well. The only caveat I'd say is probably there are some movies we care about deeply enough that we'd probably wait until maybe we're a little bit better at editing or get better recording equipment.
If/when we ever do Twin Peaks, that's going to be something where the both of us are going to have to sit down and do a lot of research, talk to a lot of people, and really get as many perspectives on the material as we possibly can before doing any episode on any individual episode of it.
I imagine any of, like, our favorite movies would be an example of that. I would want to be very, very careful before doing something by Kubrick, or particularly something like 2001, A Clockwork Orange, Dr. Strangelove, or The Shining, or Barry Lyndon.
Or Tarkovsky films.
Yeah, Tarkovsky films, absolutely.
Avatar The Last Airbender.
My personal favorite film, Marion Max.
The Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy, because there aren't any others than the first three.
The first three, and they're all masterpieces.
And they are. It's not a joke.
It's not a joke.
But seriously. But these are works that are important to us to actually get right. And we would feel like we were doing a disservice if we didn't do them correctly. So I think what we will probably end up doing, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in the early stages of our time here, we will be talking about films that maybe we like, maybe we don't, but we're not as invested in if we don't really get the episode as perfect as we want them to be. Or at the same time, we can still talk about concepts that we find particularly interesting. For example, the idea of a film being good because it adheres to a checklist of variables that you would assume would belong to a good film or a good work of art. Even if we mess that up now, I mean, that's a topic that I don't think either of us are ever going to get tired of. So it could be a topic that in the future, when we are more well-equipped, we could not only do it as a conversation where we talk about the topic again, but it could be a before and after. As of right now, we're in the stages of kind of noodling around and figuring out what we want. I don't have any concrete examples of the types of films I'm thinking of when I say not as invested, but still like the movie.
I can think of a few. And I also say an example of, like, how we're sort of noodling around and things like format. Like, we actually, this is, being open about this, this is the second time we've tried recording this episode, because the first time we decided to have absolutely no format and just try this, like, freeform conversation like we'd have, and it devolved into who
would you fuck, Mitch McConnell or Ted Cruz? Which, I mean,
the answer is McConnell. Which, by the way,
and as a side note, I do feel comfortable saying that I would be comfortable doing that as a podcast episode. That is only 50% not true. I would be interested in doing that as a podcast episode, but
if you want us to do that as a podcast episode, go on Apple Podcast and write Ron Paul is an old man if you're interested. If you're not interested, write Ron Paul did 9/11.
I wanted to say I appreciated it because he said that a few times in the other recording that we did. And when he said Ron Paul is an old man, in that pause that you heard there, I was thinking, oh, he's actually going to be a little more restrained and not bring up 9/11, and then he just did it anyway, which I liked that.
I believe in, listen, Ron Paul's a truther, and I'm a truther.
Is Ron Paul a truther?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
Whenever he denies it, and then people are like, well, but, like, I believe 9/11 is an inside job, and he's like, yeah. He's also a racist.
Well, that's not even a
He hates black people. He hates them.
He also hates people that don't have health care already, as we know.
Yeah.
That is a shocking moment, but let's not get so far into that.
So we've now guaranteed that no libertarian will listen to the podcast, and that is something.
Well, it's a good thing that we have booked a really special guest for Death of a Nation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have.
You're all in a... we're not going to spoil it. It's a treat. So the last question isn't really a podcast question. I have gotten this so many times in my life, and I know you have too, Grayson, and it's this. Do you even like movies?
Yes, I do. I just care to be discerning about them.
Actually, my favorite related comment is when people, you know, I was talking to someone once about The Greatest Showman and why that movie is a complete piece of shit, and it is a complete piece of shit. I was talking about sort of why I didn't like it and why I didn't think the music worked in the context, and he was saying something about, well, but, you know, I don't watch it for the kind of intense, slow evaluation stuff. I'm just having fun. And I'm like, well, I'm not saying that this doesn't make it intellectual. I'm saying this is why it isn't good at making me have fun. One of my big philosophies of film criticism, one of the big things that drives me, is I believe in taking a film on its own terms. It is not in any way acceptable to watch a movie and then say, but really, it's not intellectual. It's not the movie I wanted it to be. Ego, it's bad. You're supposed to do, and it's not to say that it's never okay to say that what a film's doing isn't worth doing. That's a worthwhile conversation to have, but on its terms. You know, just because a movie isn't what you want it to be doesn't mean it's bad. Just because a movie is dumb doesn't mean it's bad.
Something like Army of Darkness. A supremely stupid movie. It's also one of my very favorite films of all time. Truly one of the most entertaining movies of the 90s, and it is rock stupid in a artful and deliberate way that makes it an even stronger movie than something that is hailed as a masterpiece for dated reasons, like a bad movie like American Beauty, a movie that is a drama that fancies itself as something that takes real ideas very seriously. I think that on its own terms, it is weaker at meeting its aspirations than Army of Darkness is its aspirations. So the sentiment is agreed upon.
I'm very surprised the film example you used wasn't Hot Rod.
Well, Hot Rod is a better movie than Army of Darkness, but that's but more importantly, both are better than American Beauty, which is a bad dated film. Just as a side note, I fucking hope you fucking realize that I'm getting a point on that movie. That movie's not good.
It'll be a long time since I'm comfortable seeing that movie. For those of you who don't know, and so you can follow along with us as you want, this is on our letterbox, me and Grayson have a little running competition.
Since we met each other, I think it was around then.
So what happens is, sometimes Grayson watches a movie and he's just wrong. And that doesn't happen often, but sometimes he's wrong. He's just so wrong.
Underline, italicize, in bold print, wrong.
Like, neon lights, like let's say he gives Star Trek Into Darkness a 10 out of 10 rating. Let's say theoretically...
Yeah, this isn't stated in the podcast.
But let's say theoretically he did this.
Yeah, this isn't stated in the podcast.
And then he's so wrong about
so,
it.
It's so embarrassing.
Like a loser. I get a point. And let's say I'm wrong about a movie. Let's say I like Howard the Duck, theoretically. Let's say I liked it. And in fairness, I did not give it a 10 out of 10, like Grayson theoretically gave Star Trek Into Darkness the first time he saw it. Let's say, theoretically.
I want to make this as clear as possible. I understand that you really didn't like Star Trek Into Darkness, and I understand why. Literally, those are actually not even comparable. If you like Howard the Duck, that is actually way more embarrassing. I actually am just letting you know this. I know you're trying to make this sound worse on my end, but like you have no fucking leg to stand on.
So let's say I watch Howard the Duck again, and I'm like, oh, I don't like this movie. He gets a point, and eventually one of us dies, and we get to feel morally superior about winning.
Mm-hmm.
I am ahead because Grayson was wrong about certain movies. If you want to follow along with our ongoing competition, go to our letterbox.
Go to my letterbox, because Jesse doesn't fucking update shit with his lists on letterbox.
That's
so
true. Yeah. Well, I update. I just don't.
No, you don't.
Lists.
No, you don't. Yeah, for the first time in like a fucking like 3 months or something. You have 4 lists. It's not difficult to update those regularly. You just don't.
Anyway, Dwayne Grayson's Letterbox. He has a whole. He has the great. He has the very few films under the Grayson's points, and then he has the majestic, beautiful films under the Jesse's points.
Jesse is only acting like this because he knows that for literally up until. I mean, we've known each other for and done this kind of shit with each other, where we talk about films a lot. For about 7 years now, and he's only bragging about this because genuinely for 6 of those 7 years, I was beating him the entire time.
I'm going to put the brakes on this for a second. We will eventually have an episode just on this topic, but you got a little taste of it then. So just, I guess, to conclude, is there any sort of final thing, Grayson, you want to say to people before we sign off for the night?
Well, I'm sure that with anybody that has any investment in making something, whether they're a painter or a filmmaker, a writer of any kind, sometimes you get a little too close to something and you not always have the self-awareness to see what something actually is from a distance. But I hope that people will enjoy our podcast. I hope that people will get involved in the discussion, even if maybe at times we are a little more self-indulgent than we actually realize. I'm happy that we're doing this, and I hope that you will be too.
Firstly, thank you so much for listening to this. Not just this episode we're putting out today, but thank you for listening just in general to any amount of the episode that you can, whether it's for 5 minutes here and there, whether it's all of it. This is a project that does mean a lot to me. I know that probably times tonight where I've come off as a bit of a pretentious dick, but I do really care about this. I care about this podcast. I care about the show. I care about film criticism. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoy these episodes. I hope you enjoy the Obama's America episode and all the D'Souza episodes and whatever episodes we come up with in the future, whether it's a retrospective on every James Bond film or watching the entire filmography of that director from Pontopopoulos, was it?
You're thinking of Jim Wynorski.
Jim Wynorski's
Pontopopoulos.
No, but thank you so much for listening. It's really been a pleasure. To the families of John Lewis and Michael Brooks, me and Grayson both send our condolences. Heartfelt thanks for them both and their service. And with that said, I'm Jesse Horowitz.
And I'm Grayson Lazarus.
And this was More Than Thumbs.